Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, Pete Carroll was on with Rich Eisen the other day, and we talked about him being asked about Russell Wilson, the drama with Russell Wilson, and he cuts him off. He says, Rich, slow your roll. He doesn't really say that, but he doesn't really let it get much further than that. Kind of keeps the same message, the same tone of, look, it was never that big of a deal. That happened so long ago. Why are we talking about it? And Jake, as you know, I've been giving Pete a bit of a hard time with this because I'm like, you guys, listen, Russell Wilson's agent came out and told Adam Schefter, these are the four teams my client would want to be traded to. Yeah, I'm going to be taking that seriously. I'm going to be like, what the heck is happening here? But if head coach says all is good, if quarterback says all is good, then all is good heading into this year. And I'm not going to read anything else from it. But you took a listen to this interview and you kind of went the other route. You said, look, I don't know that I'm reading anything negative. I actually feel even more confident that Pete Carroll isn't sending Russell Wilson anywhere. And it's not because he explicitly said that, Jake. But why is it?
Well, I think that the reason why I feel that way is because all offseason long, I had said that Pete Carroll, if it's up to Pete Carroll, he doesn't want to part ways with Russell Wilson. He does not want to rebuild. He does not want to start over. He has five seasons left in his contract, and that's how he thinks. That's how he processes. He doesn't even think about retirement at this point in time. He's not thinking, oh, in 2 years or in 3 years, this is what I'm going to do. He's thinking about this in 5 years. And within the life of Russell Wilson's contract, they also have two franchise tags that they could go down the road with Russell Wilson if they really wanted to. I don't think that's the route that they would go down. I think eventually you would see a, you know, extension of some kind if things were to continue to go in the right direction, which we all hope that is the case. But Pete Carroll doesn't even want to go down that road, never has wanted to go down that road. And here in cut number nine, so much so, he doesn't even let Rich Eisen finish his question.
The book is still open in terms of a national conversation with just quarterbacks.
It shouldn't be.
Well,
it shouldn't be. In terms of up here in Seattle, it shouldn't be. But I get it that guys are doing it, and I know Aaron's been real vocal, and whatever's going on there, it keeps this discussion alive. And so, you know, it's fun for the media, and they do what they got to do with it, and it's okay.
So, look, you know, Pete, he's talking about, hey, the media's got to do what they got to do. But, you know, Pete shutting that conversation down in as strong a terms as you're going to see Pete Carroll. Now, it's not in the same, you know, groveling way that the Green Bay Packers are having to do with Aaron Rodgers in terms of, oh, we think Aaron's great. Aaron's, you know, gosh, he knows how much we love him. He knows that, you know, we want him to be here so bad. Please, Aaron, don't leave us. Right? That's not the tone that Pete Carroll is going with. But in that interview with Rich Eisen as well, gave tons of credit to Russell Wilson, how great of a player he's been over his career, all the great things that he can do, and all the great things that he hopes Shane Waldron can unlock with Russell's talent and the talent that they have. So he did compliment Russell Wilson, but then when Rich even brings up this question about it being a national story still, Pete's like, no, it shouldn't be. It should not be a national story. End of discussion. Russell Wilson's a Seattle Seahawk and will continue to be a Seattle Seahawk. That is as strong a terms of him shutting down that conversation that I think we've heard. And him coming out after the draft and saying those things, I think is important to hear, but it just reiterates that thought process or that conversation that we've all had or that I had here with you on the show is that Pete isn't looking to rebuild or start over. It is, as long as he is the head coach here, he wants Russell Wilson to be his quarterback.
And neither Pete nor John Schneider said anything publicly when all of this was going down. Cut number 10, he explained that a bit.
We've had a really good offseason of working, and there was an ongoing media discussion that I did not take part in. John and I did not. We refused to be party to that. And Russ did what he could once he saw it happening to stay as quiet as he could, because it was going to play and have a life of its own anyway. So what it amounted to was, I think, a refocusing, you know, making sure that we were on the same page, making sure that we were clear so that we could withstand any of the scrutiny that would come towards us. And we did that.
So let's talk about a refocusing, though, right?
Yeah.
What's refocusing? Is refocusing like, hey, we can all agree we want to win. literally no one doubts that Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson want to win. They are obsessed with winning, obsessed with it. It is part of their identity, like their core identity of who they are is winning. Mm-hmm. No one is doubting that. The bigger issue has always been, well, how do you want to win? And what do you do when you disagree about how to win? How do you move forward with that? And how do you move forward when you disagree about how to win, when your quarterback is getting even more power and getting a little bit older and wants to advocate for himself in a way that a 22-year-old is never going to be able to?
Right. And can we go back to that, just halfway through that, the second part of that cut? Because you got to parse Pete a little bit here when he talks about these things and focus on the refocusing. Focus on the refocusing.
Russ did what he could once he saw it happening to stay as quiet as he could, because it was going to play and have a life of its own anyway. So what it amounted to was, I think, a refocusing, you know, making sure that we were on the same page, making sure that we were clear so that we could withstand any of the scrutiny that would come towards us. And we did that.
Ah, so for any of you out there that think this is a media creation,
I'd like to personally apologize.
Well, I'm not apologizing because it wasn't a media creation. And the you know, Pete Carroll saying that there was a refocusing, he's not just talking about self-reflection. He's not talking about Pete Carroll and John Schneider and Russell Wilson individually looking themselves in the mirror. They do that after every season. What do they need to refocus? They need to refocus their relationship. They need to refocus their vision and make sure that they're on the same page and have a firm understanding as to what everybody's thinking and how they're going to improve the situation moving forward and get on the same page, essentially, right? That's the refocusing. And there was a refocusing that needed to be made, right? It had to happen. And so that, to me, is encouraging to hear Pete Carroll talk about that, that that's something that they worked on, that's something that they had conversations behind the scenes to make that happen. And yes, it did become a big national story for very strong reasons, right? As you mentioned, the moment your franchise quarterback, you know, not just talks about the offensive line and the sacks and things of that nature, but talking or having his agent, Mark Rogers, list out four teams in reaction to an Athletic article that was put out there previous to that, I think that, yeah, there does need to be a refocusing. There does need to be Richard Sherman's, you know, terms, a kumbaya meeting of some kind to figure out what's going on, where's the disconnect, and how they can get on the same page moving forward. And indeed, are they at that same point? And I go back to that first cut that we played, Stacey, that Pete Carroll shutting down those rumors, in his mind, it's not even a conversation. In his mind, it's over. That Russell Wilson will be a Seahawk through the remainder of his contract. The question remains, is that indeed the case? Will that be the case after next season? And I hope so. That means that if we're talking about the same song and dance, you know, that we were at the beginning of the offseason, that means that 2021 was not successful at all.
Do you think they successfully refocused?
Yes, I do. I do think that
genuinely.
Genuinely, I think that they have successfully refocused and that they've been able to revamp. Now, would I love for them to all be in the building together? Absolutely, I would. I would love for that to be the case. But at this point, I do think that they have successfully gotten past this and that all eyes and all the focus is going on to making 2021 the best season that they can possibly make it.
Well, and I hope that that's what happens for them, right? Like what I can't get over, the most damning part of the Athletic article to me was the moment that wrote about Russell Wilson leaving a meeting because he was upset about them. I don't know if it wasn't taking his ideas, not taking his suggestions, whatever it was. Clearly, and that happened during the season, and they continued to win in spite of that. Like, I'd like to say that reportedly happened during the season, and this team still finished as the division winner. Like, that's still pretty impressive. If you can get on the same page and you can make it work, this team feels, I don't know, I don't think they have a top five roster in football or a top roster in football. They're absolutely a playoff contender. They can absolutely take their division. I'm very curious. It's why the addition of Shane Waldron remains, I think, the most fascinating addition to me. I am curious to see what the relationship looks like between head coach, between quarterback and offensive coordinator, as all of those people in positions start to evolve. Because again, you're Pete Carroll. This is really the first time lately that you've been working with a quarterback that's this tenured franchise quarterback within your organization, it's a different relationship.
It is a different relationship. And I think that that is something when you talk about refocusing, that's also maybe something that, you know, Pete Carroll, John Schneider have looked at this and said, hey, we've always had conversations with Russell Wilson. Why is there this friction? And maybe it's a reevaluation of saying, okay, yeah, we do need to think about this a little bit differently, that Russ is going into year 10, that there is a new dynamic here at play, and we're okay with that, right? And we're moving forward, and we're getting on the same page in that regard. But I also think, and more importantly, what I think more realistically, as you ask that question, Stacey, what pops into mind is the idea that Pete Carroll, for the first time, I really truly believe, is handing the keys over the offense to Shane Waldron. That doesn't mean that Pete Carroll isn't, you know, sitting in the meetings and listening and being an observer of what's going on, but that Shane Waldron has the keys to the offense, that he's being allowed to have his, not only his vision come through, but it's his baby, it's his offense. He's not running something that was here previously. And that to me is very important and very key to this whole process and this whole relationship and this dynamic, that I think what great coaches do, and great coaches like Pete Carroll and others that have come before him, is they own their side. Pete Carroll is a defensive-minded head coach and is a great head coach and has had tremendous success in this league. I think Pete Carroll is at his best when it's defense, special teams, and overall management. I think when you start putting your hands and getting your fingerprints more on the offense, I think that's overextending yourself.
No, well, wait a minute. The problem is a head coach can absolutely do that.
Sure, but do you want him calling plays?
You're saying it's overextending his what he's bringing to the table. Because technically, as a head coach, you can do that. You're not overextending yourself as a head coach.
Yes,
that's
you
his
are.
Right to do.
To be successful, you hired these people to do their job. The offensive coordinator, what I want in the world of, if you have a head coach that is a defensive-minded head coach, if you have an offensive-minded head coach, the person that you should be hiring on the other side of the ball should essentially be the head coach of the offense or defense. That doesn't mean that situationally you don't have conversations, right? Pete Carroll should absolutely be involved in the conversations of, hey, do we go for it here on fourth down? What do we want to do? Are we going for a field goal, or do we want to go and score, right? Situationally, your head coach is absolutely involved. But when it comes to calling plays, I don't want Pete Carroll, you know, having them call a timeout on third and four because he doesn't love the play call. Like, that to me is overextending yourself.
Yes.
And that has happened. So when you look at that situation, and he's admitted to that in interviews. So I think that that is a ever evolving process in this relationship and in this growth mindset. And I'm excited, you know, to look at what's going on right now. And all things being considered, it seems like that is the direction that they're going towards. I think it's a much healthier situation.
All right. It is 1:15. That means it's time for NFL headlines. Aaron Rodgers, like we mentioned earlier, no show at OTAs. He's been a constant staple in the past at these activities, as pointed out by ESPN's Adam Schefter. This would be, if not the first, one of the only times Aaron Rodgers has missed early OTAs. Now, Albert Breer said that both Rodgers and Wilson missing OTAs, no confirmation on that yet, but reportedly going to miss OTAs, is not a reflection of any situation. There's been speculation about both quarterbacks, clearly more recently of Rodgers. It's not a reflection on either situation. It's just part of a bigger labor discussion with the league.
Yeah, it is. And I think that the players are trying to flex their muscle a little bit, and they're trying to figure it out. And I believe that the players are getting a false sense of, oh, we could actually make this work. Stacey, like, we could actually change the offseason regiment for the future. But really, I think it's a false sense of a positive step because of COVID. I think NFL teams have been willing to give in a little bit more because of COVID, because of the uniqueness of that situation. And before, like the Seahawks, they sent out the players. They sent out a statement of saying, we're not going to participate in off-season, you know, voluntary off-season activities.
Mm-hmm.
That was before the NFL and the CDC and everybody else came out and changed their stance on, you know, mask wearing, on, you know, vaccinations and all those types of things that changes the dynamic of what it would be like in the building and in your everyday life if you're reporting to the facility. So things have changed, things have maneuvered, but It's happened very quickly. So I think that NFL teams and players, they're working together to try and come up with solutions. But that's where I think that this offseason's been very, once again, you're kind of going with the flow. Next offseason, when it seems like things will be more settled, I don't think the NFL is going to be lenient whatsoever in terms of their stance with players showing up for voluntary workouts, what they're going to do in the OTA period, Stacey. I don't think they're going to budge whatsoever.
A recent article talks about NFL coaches most likely to win their first Super Bowl in 2021. The answers are split between the Seans. It's Sean McVay and Sean McDermott. Now, I understand the hype about the Rams this year. I do. They're a great team in the best division in football. They upgraded at really one of their only weak spots, which was at quarterback. They had a running back group that was never as talented as Todd Gurley was at his best, but Todd Gurley at his best was one of the best running backs in the league. So it's going to be hard to replace that. We've seen Seattle try and fail for a long time before they finally struck gold in the seventh round with Chris Carson. So I understand that upgrading at quarterback, coming back with your league best defense, is enough to make you kind of the darling of the NFL for this year. And for good reason. Like, there's legs to that. But
yeah,
I still don't understand, like, the constant buy-in with the Rams. I may look back at this in several months, come February next year, and be like, oh, my God, Stacey, pretend that you never doubted the Rams. I just don't understand why the universal praise of the Rams taking the NFC West by storm. I genuinely don't know which of the four teams could win this division. I don't.
Right.
The talent is that close and the division is that good. I don't understand the love of the Rams, and I would expect some regression on defense.
I would too. They were lights out last year. They lose Brandon Staley, their defensive guru, who goes on and becomes the head coach with the Chargers. Same kind of conversation that the 49ers are having, right? Can the defense continue to have that great production without the mastermind behind it all? Robert Saleh goes on to the Jets. You have Brandon Staley go on to the Chargers. Can they keep that same magic alive? And I would feel more confident in the Rams' ability to do that if they hadn't lost a number of different guys in their secondary. But they did. And you have Aaron Donald, you have Jalen Ramsey. Those guys can tilt and shift the game to their favor, no doubt about that. But I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that they are the number one defense again, that they are a top five defense again. Things change. But I do think that the reason why that they are being favored, Stacey, is the idea of Sean McVay finally having a top.
No, I'll tell you what it is. People want to be right about Sean McVay.
They do. That's
what it is.
That is
true. People want to be right about Sean McVay, that he was going to come in and change football forever, and they want to be like, see, I told you. All he needed was to get rid of Jared Goff. I told you that's what it was.
And you're probably right. You're probably right about that. And I do think that the pick with the Buffalo Bills and Sean McDermott, I think it's a good one. But also at the same time, I think that when you have Josh Allen, to me, he had an amazing year, and the future is very, very bright for him. I want to see the consistency. The big knock on him was accuracy, Stacey. He fixed that last year. They surrounded him with better offensive weaponry, and it really changed the game for him. But can he come back and do it again? The one thing that we talk about with Russell Wilson and the other greats, they've lived a lifetime of flashy quarterbacks. They've lived a lifetime, maybe 10 years for Russell Wilson. Mm-hmm. How many quarterbacks have come in for a couple years and been really, really good, and then they fade away? And then another group comes in and really, really good for a season or two and then fades away. Can Josh Allen do it again and again and again and have this long career, consistent career? That's going to be something that he is going to have to answer this year.
253 texting in, the Rams picking up Matthew Stafford is huge. Ironic, considering that I've been saying, like, yes, Matthew Stafford is going to be a huge upgrade over Goff, but I'm telling you guys, this division is the toughest in football. The toughest right. in football. It will be a gauntlet for them in the six games they have against each other. Like, that is no joke. You've got to get out of there alive,
right.
And they're all going to take some hits.
Well, and one of the other things that you have to look at with Matthew Stafford, it's two really important keys for Stafford. Can he change two things now that he's with the Rams and now he's with the offensive whiz kid and Sean McVay? Is one, can he stay healthy? Because he wasn't able to do that at a high level with the Detroit Lions. Big-time injury history. Second thing is turnovers. He has a tendency to give defenses opportunities to get their hands on the football because he is a gunslinger. And that, to me, are the two things that Matthew Stafford has to come in and answer and show that he can change those two things. Because if he can, I mean, yeah, it is a huge pickup.
Adam Schefter reports the Falcons want a first-round pick for Julio Jones, but others around the league don't believe the Falcons will be able to get that. Now, before you come up with your opinion, and I want you to, and Jake, obviously I want yours, text yours into 710-710 Mac and Jack's text line. I want you guys to know that you hear Julio Jones. Obviously, he's been in the league since 2011, and so you think he's older, and he is. I mean, he turned 31. This will be his age 32 season. That said, his stats haven't necessarily fallen off. Last year was his highest yards per reception, finished with just 3 touchdowns, appeared in just 9 games, still had 771 yards, and by the way, has only 1, 2, 3 times in his entire career since 2011 had less than 1,000 yards. That's insane. Julio Jones is an insane talent. There might be a team tempted.
Well, I do think that there's going to be teams that are absolutely tempted out there to get Julio Jones's services to their team. That, to me, not a doubt at all. But a first-round pick for an aging receiver that's got a massive cap hit over the next 3 years, I don't think that's going to be the case. And that's also why, Stacey, that the conversation has been that they're not trading Julio Jones now, but after June 1st, right, where his cap hit become significantly less. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to figure out what that cap hit will ultimately look like in Julio Jones's contract. So I'm going to do some research and get an answer back on that. But to me, Julio Jones, I don't even know if he commands a second round pick, not because of his talent, but because of that cap hit and because of his age. I mean, you might be looking at a third round pick potentially for Julio Jones. Will the Atlanta Falcons be okay parting ways with him for that third round pick? That remains to be seen, but I really have a hard time seeing that Julio Jones is going to be traded for a first-round pick and maybe not even a second.
All right, you keep looking up that information because now I actually want to know out of curiosity, and there's a fascinating story we didn't have time to get to about how the Pats were supposedly having internal discussions for acquiring Julio Jones. I wonder where they stand in the whole playoff picture. I'm not predicting they're going to make the playoffs this year. I do wonder what they're going to look like, though, with some of those new free agent additions they made. Don't forget, they were like raking the first couple days of free agency, and so I'm curious to know what that's going to look like. But we are going to take a turn here. We are going to go from the NFL, heading back to MLB, talking about what any team in general owes its fans, and maybe specifically what the Mariners owe their fans as part of the rebuild. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
All right, you guys, send your questions in. By the way, in 15 minutes, we're getting to what I need to know. Any question you want, Mac and Jack's text line, 710-710. I'm going to start collecting them so you can get them in anytime. Before we get to that, though, we had a really interesting conversation. It spawned from a question that Ryan Divish of the Seattle Times received for his mailbag, and then I just kind of broadened it to a more general conversation about what a team owes its fans. What does a team ever owe its fans? Right? And you think about it, we're all sports fans. It's why you guys are listening. It's why Jake and I are talking to each other. It's why DJ's here. We're all sports fans. So we're all going to feel a sense of whether it's ownership, participation, pride, anger, hurt, frustration, whatever it is. Sports is a very kind of like intimate like relationship with your city, with your team. And so it's an important question because there is always going to be this undercurrent of either being owed something, wanting something. The context with the Mariners makes this interesting because this isn't just a team where it's like, oh, what more do you guys want, right? Hey, Yankees fans, what more do you want? Are you so mad you didn't make the World Series in a single decade? I'm sorry. Oh, God, that must be so hard for you. You only have 27 more to turn to. Like, what more do you want? No.
Or that earlier this season, the Dodgers...
Oh, God.
The Dodgers fan that was talking about
that Dodgers fan.
Oh, how hard it is.
This is embarrassing.
This is an embarrassing loss.
Embarrassing.
We're embarrassed for our franchise after they have just experienced, you know, a World Series win. And
what more do you want? That's the question that I keep. What more do you want, Patriots fan? I was giving Paul a hard time last year when the Patriots were 15th in offense and he was disappointed. I was like, what more do you want? But you know what? When Mariners fans are mad and when Mariners fans are disappointed, I'm like, you know what? You got a point. Like, you are owed more than what you're getting. And so what makes this tricky, Jake, is that the Mariners are in a rebuild. This isn't a secret. They've been in a rebuild for, what is this? You said their third year in the rebuild. It's hard for the Mariners to deliver on a winning product. So you can say you owe me a good team, but if I'm in the middle of getting this farm system out here and these prospects up here, I can't promise you a good team right now. We head into the year knowing it was going to be a struggling team. Then what do you owe? What are you owed as a fan? And what did you say?
Well, I think that there's two things that the Mariners owe their fans. Number one, I mean, you've got to put a club out there that looks like an actual big league club. I mean, what we witnessed over the weekend, and some of that is due to injury, but the other part of that is the glaring poor decision that they made to not bring in consistent big leaguers to their lineup to round this out with a lot of the youth that they are experiencing. And you're talking about giving opportunities to guys like Tom Murphy and Luis Torrens and not, you know, bringing in an actual major league catcher that's got legit serious experience that can, you know, is going to bring you big league at bats and is going to bring you consistency.
And not vacate home plate.
How about that? Or how about, simple, you know, second base, right? Second base. How about, you know, all right, you want to give Dylan Moore an opportunity? Just don't give it to him every single day, right? Platoon him with a big leaguer, a veteran player that you know you're going to get consistent production out of, right? I think, and you can say the same thing at first base, although that to me is a little stickier because you really want to give Evan White every opportunity, every shot possible since you gave him that contract. But there's other opportunities, other ways that you could have spent money. How about the starting rotation? Okay, you spent that on James Paxton. That ended up being a hindsight 2020. That was a mistake for you, but you could have went out and spent $2 million more on Taiwan Walker. He's doing pretty good. He's doing all right with the Mets right now, or another arm out there instead of being in the situation that you currently are in. So that's number one, okay? Mm-hmm. The second thing that they owe this fan base is seeing this process through, seeing it all the way through, and that they better deliver, right? They better deliver on this plan. And, you know, the Mariners fans, when you ask for patience, when you call upon this loyal fan base, because they are loyal, this fan base is loyal to continue to be patient after 19 dysfunctional years going on 20, you got to come through. You've got to come through and you've got to continue to build and you've got to show promise of what is coming down the line and that you're building and working towards something. And Stacey, something that you pointed to as well is that you can't wait 2 years down the road to spend. You've got to look at this offseason as a marker, as a point that you're really taking a step forward and you're really taking this process seriously.
Yeah, and I think spending needs to be, I think what's owed fans, Mariners fans, look, there are loyal diehard fans in any sports franchise. It's not like Mariners are unique in that way, but considering that they have the longest playoff drought of any of the major leagues, considering that they have fans who, and I DJ, not to put you on the spot and put you on blast, but I did this in the open when we talked about this. DJ is 24, 25 years old, and the last time the Mariners were in the postseason, he was 5. He watches every single Mariners game. Like, I'm not saying that, like, that somehow makes him better than the average fan. But what I'm saying is, like, the Mariners have a fantastic, like, event staff that does amazing things with, like, one great team to celebrate. You know what I mean? Like, the Mariners have fans that are, some of them, in age where they've either never seen or don't remember a playoff appearance, not a World Series, a playoff appearance, and they still love watching this team and follow the team religiously. And then they have fans that are obviously much older than that who do remember those teams and who buy in year in and year out, and sometimes who don't buy in, who just watch because they love baseball in their bones. Like, they can't help but still watch and see what the Mariners are doing, even though they know that it's just going to let them down. So, yeah, the Mariners do owe them something. The Mariners do owe fans something. I think that they're making an effort to do it, at least with the prospects. What they owe them is a good faith effort.
Yeah.
It's got to be more than just, we got Julio and we got Jared. Is that enough? No. It's not, because that's not enough to get you a World Series team. In fact, Baseball America, and this isn't the only source of this information, you can find it all over the place, it's basic stuff, spending and a higher payroll strongly correlated with winning a World Series. Only 24 of the last 25 World Series champs had an opening day payroll in the outside of the top half of the league. So the only team outside of the top half of the league in payroll, opening day payroll, that won a World Series was the 2003 Marlins. There's a strong positive correlation between spending and winning.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't always work out, but what absolutely will not work out 99% of the time is not spending and winning a World Series. The Mariners have to be able to follow through on this rebuild. Part of that good faith effort isn't just making sure that those prospects work out and you take care of them and you don't bring them up too early and you send them down when they need more work and you make sure they're okay and you get fans excited. Another part of following through is spending to bring in the talent and the pieces you don't have. And I am worried, and many other fans are worried, that that step won't be taken, and it must.
Well, and I fully agree with you on that. But the other example that we just got, the stark contrast of where the Mariners are versus where they hope to be, well, you got that over the weekend with the San Diego Padres. And to your point, Stacey, eventually you have to go down the line. You eventually have to spend. You can't wait. Oh, we're going to wait for the young guys to show us they're ready, or we're going to spend when they show us this. You have to surround them. That's what's frustrating about watching this lineup right now, is that there's nowhere to hide for these young players. If they fail and they feel tough and they fall flat on their face, it is obvious, because there's no other help around in the lineup other than Mitch Haniger and Kyle Seager, and they're going to have their off nights, obviously, right, as we have witnessed before. So what you have to build around those guys and provide opportunities and safety nets. And Fernando Tatis Jr., when he came up, guess what? There were other major big additions that were already there along with him. You have Eric Hosmer. You have Mookie Betts. You have who else, DJ?
Manny Machado.
Okay, Manny Machado. Not Mookie Betts. Manny Machado is what I was thinking of. You have who else?
Will Myers, their right fielder.
Okay, Will Myers. Great. Mookie Betts. Definitely not Mookie Betts. But Manny Machado, right? Those guys were in place as Fernando Tatis was coming up. The pressure wasn't all on Fernando Tatis. He was an addition to, right? He was an add-on to. When Julio Rodriguez comes up, whenever that is, I don't want it to be solely on Julio Rodriguez and Jared Kelnick's back at this stage in their young careers. They need to be surrounded by good veteran talent along with that young promising talent. And that's when I think you're really going to see this thing seriously turned around. And that has to, as you've been pointing out, Stacey, you can't wait around on that. That has to be something that the Mariners organization is committed to, the Mariners ownership is committed to making happen.
Yeah, here's the conversation I don't want to have when they bring up Julio Rodriguez. Oh, this offense, the bats have been pretty weak. I really hope Julio can give them something. Like, that's the conversation I don't want to be having. I don't want to be like, you know, they're hitting about 200 as a team. Let's hope Julio can bring something for them. Don't put that on him. Make him something where it's like, imagine this lineup with Julio Rodriguez.
Right.
How cool is that?
Absolutely.
All right. What I need to know is coming your way. Send questions in to the Mac and Jack's text line, 710-710. Any question you want, send it in right now. What I need to know coming your way next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
It's What I Need to Know, brought to you by All Red Heating, Cooling, Electric. Get your questions in to the Mac and Jack's text line, 710-710. I've already got some good ones. First of all, Jake, people keep asking when your episode of American Ninja Warrior will air. And I know you've said it before, but you have to tell the people again, because they ask every day.
I will let you guys know as soon as I find out. It's airing this summer. They haven't told me when it's going to happen, so I'm sure that the week before or something like that, when it is going to air, they'll let me know. So I promise I will keep you guys all informed. We'll have some fun with it, I promise. So as soon as I know, I'll let you guys know.
Okay, how about this one? What I need to know, if Russell Wilson never wins another Super Bowl, will he be remembered for the interception that he threw against the Patriots? So basically, do you have to have another Super Bowl to cleanse the palate of that? And I'll add on to this texter's question. Is Russell Wilson going to need to win another Super Bowl to shake the idea that he's always just going to be this, like, half-season MVP guy?
I do think that...
That narrative's there now.
Of course it is. I think that when you look at Russell Wilson's career, it is one of those things that is mind-boggling when you look at the statistics. Like, Stacey, when you roll through the stats of what Russell has done in his first nine seasons, it's unparalleled. Like, he is on track to do some special things. Like, we will, at the end of Russell Wilson's career, if he stays on track and continues to keep improving the way that he has and shown in a variety of different ways, he stays down on this road and has another 10-year career. We're looking at the end of it, rolling through his career stats and going, oh my gosh, that snuck up on me. I didn't realize he was that far along in passing yards and touchdowns and passer rating and wins and all these different things. He's the winningest quarterback in franchise history in the NFL, winningest quarterback in the NFL his first nine seasons. But I do think that there is that stigma for him that eluded MVP, that eluded next Super Bowl, that if he was able to get those two things, especially the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Especially the Super Bowl. It would be a big... Russell doesn't feel this at all, by the way. But, like, I think from a national media perspective, I think it would be a big monkey off of his back in terms of where everybody thinks of him in, you know, the quarterback hierarchy and where everything sits right now.
Yeah, there'd be no more, like, second, third, fourth, fifth best to be like, oh, you know, you've been to three, you won another one. I mean, that's huge, right?
Yes, absolutely.
I think Aaron Rodgers is still working. The thing is, Aaron Rodgers has had those MVPs, and he's had phenomenal moments, but he's also been working to get back there ever since, what was it? Were they 2010, 11?
Yeah, 2011.
I forget which season, but...
I'm pretty sure it was 11.
What I need to know... Stacy, what was it like to be trained by Yoda to become a Jedi Master? I see the text line still taking part in making fun of me for my outfit choice today, which
yeah,
is a very
fashion-forward
Zara kimono. Thank you very
much.
What
color is your lightsaber?
Okay, DJ, that's enough.
It's an important question.
It's green.
It's green. Okay. All right. Yeah. That's important. But you still didn't answer the question. I mean, everybody wants to know what was it like.
It was great. It was great. It was weird being that Yoda and I are the same height. But I think that we eventually respected each other. Very similar ages as well, both Yoda and I. From the 360, now, Jake, you talked about Drew Brees paying a visit to you and Russell Wilson, and mm-hmm. I believe Will Disley was out there, a couple other guys out there. So the text line wants to know, Jake, who throws a better ball, Russell Wilson or your hero, Drew Brees? You have to answer honestly.
Oh, man. I mean, Drew is one of the greatest passers of all time.
That's
the most accurate quarterback.
We have the answer, you guys. We have the answer.
Wait.
No, we got it.
Hold on.
We got it.
Now, when Drew Brees was watching Russ out there, you could tell that there was a serious level of envy from Drew Brees looking at Russell and going, man, I wish I could do some of the things that Russell Wilson could do.
Really?
Just physically.
I mean, oh, you mean like...
The way that Russell can throw the ball, the way that he can snap, the way that... He generates power and torque just so easily and naturally. Yeah, it would make any quarterback jealous. You know, Drew Brees being a pocket passer, also the envy of being able to throw the way that Russell Wilson does out on the run. But, I mean, Drew is the most accurate quarterback of all time. I mean, I don't think that you could say that at this stage that Russell Wilson... Now, what are we talking about? Accuracy, or are we just talking about overall throw?
I think overall, I'm going to go with overall throw. Like, you know when you just see a perfect spiral? Like, when you see a throw and you're like...
Whew. Okay, so if we're talking about overall throwing, Russell is the better thrower. If we're talking about accuracy, I don't think Drew Brees is touched by anybody.
No one. Absolutely no one. What I need to know... Let's see. Some people... Talking about Mitch Haniger. So is Mitch Haniger not legit all of a sudden? That was related to our last segment about the Mariners being frustrating. And no, I think Mitch Haniger has been a fantastic... I don't know where this season would be without Mitch Haniger.
Oh.
Truly. Mitch Haniger has been phenomenal for them. But I think what Jake and I are talking about going out and spending additionally in free agency. And not just... I mean, yeah, spending on just guys. But how about adding a star or two or three? Why not?
100%. I mean, but the thing is though, with Mitch Haniger, he's keeping this thing afloat, and this isn't a one-person show. I mean, even with Kyle Seager, between Haniger, Kyle Seager, and you had Ty France really raking at the beginning of the year, you look at Haniger and Seager, their RBIs, their home runs, they've been keeping this thing afloat through the process, and if they're off, then guess what? It's going to be a long, long night at the ballpark. As of right now, the way that they're hitting, and you can't have that many holes in your big league lineup.
I appreciate this person texting in the Yoda voice, make fun of Stacy, people must not. Or like Yoda, like, make fun of Stacy, people must not. Or whatever he does. I don't know. Right? I've only seen Star Wars once.
We need to work on that. Okay. But it was a solid effort. Solid
Thank
effort.
Thank you. I try. All right, that'll do it for us today. He is Jake Heaps. I'm Stacey Ross. DJ Wilder on the board. Thank you guys so much for listening, but you don't want to go anywhere. Stay parked. Don't move, because Wyman and Bob is heading your way next on 710 ESPN Seattle.